I want to talk about humor tonight because humor is such an important part of being human. If you see a photograph of people that appear to be having a good time, they're probably laughing. That's sort of the universal indicator of enjoyment. And in contrast to that manifestation of happiness, there's a story about a Southeast Asian teacher who came over to visit an American retreat center. And after being there for a day or two, the teacher said, "Well, what do you think about our students?" And he said, "Well, they all look like they're suffering terribly."
Yeah.
I think it's true that we do tend to take our practice very seriously. You know, to some extent, just suck the joy right out of it. Mm-hmm. I've sat in many a meditation hall, especially on retreats, and heard people burst out into tears. Kind of common. Everyone's just very compassionate. It's fairly rare to hear someone burst out in giggles, which I feel bad about because I tend to do that a lot. Levity can be a wonderful part of practice. Blessed are they who are amused by their own foolishness, for they will always have fun. We really should enjoy this practice. That way, we'll be able to live comfortably inside of it, always mindful, and entertained by what we're going to observe. Here's my main point, that humor is like the anesthesia that allows us to cut through our defenses and observe what the mind actually does. This is important because most of us lie to ourselves all of the time about who or what we are. It's called ego. We want to believe that we're wonderful in some way, unfortunately, other than the way that we're wonderful being ourselves. We get some ideal idea of self. And, you know, unfortunately, we don't think we match that. So, you know, love and compassion also help us cut through our pretenses that we're this ideal self and accept what's really happening in our minds, because that's who we are, this phenomenon of awareness happening over and over. It comes down to the fact that we identify with our thoughts, and we can be so averse, afraid of or ashamed of or just don't like some of them, that we want to pretend that they haven't occurred. And we suppress them or deny them or forget them, believing, oh, that's just not me. And unfortunately, this way of relating to our thoughts gives them a power over us to influence future thoughts and, much more seriously, our conduct. So, in truth, we don't choose the thoughts that occur to us. They just come out of the brain. And then there they are. I mean, we see this repeatedly in our practice. when we're meditating. You know, when we meditate, we form the intention that we're going to watch our breath. And then, lo and behold, here's a thought. We're thinking. All we get to choose is whether or not we're going to continue thinking a thought once we've noticed it. So the great advantage that we as meditators have is that at least we notice that we're thinking and what the thought is. And then we have this powerful option to stop, to just let it go, turn the mind elsewhere. So this identification that we have with our thoughts, even to some extent with our emotions, but whatever is occurring in our consciousness, leads to a lot of trouble. I mean, it's sort of the sense of self, you know, and what is the mind? I tend to think of it as that part of the brain's activity that I'm aware of. You know, they talk about this 90, there's a movie coming out about the 90% of the brain that we don't use. Well, I think the organism has better uses for that 90% than to let us get our hands on it. I mean, I don't know about you, but I've made kind of a hash out of my 10%. It's best that there be a big sign that says authorized personnel only over that 90%. It's got to keep my heart beating. You know, and neuroscientists have known for decades that the brain makes decisions, and then sort of as an afterthought, in case we get curious, it tells us why it made those decisions. And, you know, we may not totally accept what our brain, the excuse our brain comes up with, but usually we buy it, you know, we let it go. Okay, that's why I did that. I've recently become well aware that my brain does a lot more than I do by this course that I'm taking that's designed to keep me from aging into a complete terror behind the steering wheel. It's brain training, and things flash on my computer screen, and it's just for a microsecond. And then I'm supposed to click, you know, where which vehicle occurred and which road sign occurred, and I swear I have not seen a thing. And yet, there's almost this somatic sense of here and here. And if I trust it, it's scary how many times I get it right. Now, I shouldn't have said I get it right, because I had very little to do with it except just trusting. My brain did it. So this is kind of the story about our minds, or what we think of even as ourself, is that we shouldn't take them all that personally. Really, we shouldn't take ourselves personally, because we're basically just the brain functions that our brain is willing for us to see. So we get to just sit back and watch our minds play, you know, like they were puppies or little kids. And they're just doing the best they can with their 10%. And we can laugh fondly about what they're doing as puppies or little kids. And, you know, clearly I'm talking about the kind of levity that doesn't have to be clever enough to go on stage in a comedy routine. Just simple stuff. Like, I was doing my physical therapy, and I may have told this story before, but bear with me. And I need to hold a stretch for 10 seconds and then relax and do it again. And so I had this great morning. I'd been really mindful and proud of it. So here I am. I'm doing my stretch. And I notice that I'm counting 21, 22, 23. And I cracked up. Because here I was getting all egotistical about how mindful I am and totally lost in thought. You know, more than double what I'm supposed to count. Just going along, 25, 26. So, you know, I could have really gotten mad at myself, whoever that is. You know, why aren't you paying attention? You're supposed to be mindful. You know, whatever you do, don't let the Sangha find out about this. But, you know, it's funny. It's funny. The mind wanted to get all puffed up about it. And, yeah, let it go. So when mindfulness shows us what's going on in our minds and we don't like it, we do have this range of possible responses. We can go into denial that it happened, that we had those thoughts. We can feel bad about ourselves because of it. We can find some justification or rationale for why it happened. I used to be good at that when I was a lawyer. Or preferably, we can recognize that it's not something that we've chosen to stick with. And then we have these options of letting it go. And amazingly, we can learn something from it each time. Each one of those times that we see the mind doing something we don't like, it's an opportunity to learn and really get to understand the mind and to cultivate compassion and metta for ourselves. Not to mention equanimity. And if we giggle about it, sympathetic joy. So we can really practice the divine abodes, the Brahma Viharas, getting a kick out of our own silliness. Suzuki Roshi, the great Zen teacher, once was asked, "How much ego do you need?" He answered, "Just enough so you don't step in front of a bus." The best way to deflate the ego painlessly is to have a good laugh about its shenanigans, a good loving laugh. A couple of Zen students were bragging about their teachers, and the first one said, "My teacher is the best. He can go days without eating." And the second one said, "My teacher has so much self-control, he can go days without sleeping." And the third one said, "My teacher is so wise that he eats when he's hungry and sleeps when he's tired." My point being, and I do have a point, the deflated ego, the one that's not puffed up, is one that can take care of our needs realistically, with love and compassion for how hard life is. In fact, living your life is so difficult that it's never been tried before. So give yourself a break. Humor is really kind of the hallmark of renunciation or letting go. What keeps us from laughing at the ironies of us in our lives is that we're clinging to some notion we have of the way we think things ought to be. We take ourselves and our ideas and the events in our lives way too seriously. Laughter breaks those tethers and we can let go. And it does it so sweetly. When we hold things lightly enough to see the humor in them, we're not causing ourselves the dukkha that comes from clinging. And that's what this practice is all about. So let me clarify a few side points that should come up right about here. I am not advocating the kind of humor that's at someone else's expense. Even if a whole auditorium is cracking up about it, that's not funny. That kind of cruel humor actually builds up the ego. It encourages us to think that we're better than the butt of the joke. So don't buy into it. You know, you don't have to stand up and say, you people are, you know, just don't go with it. It's bad medicine for everyone involved. The person telling the joke, the people buying into it, and certainly for the person who's being denigrated. And even when we're laughing about ourselves, there's a particular way to do it. It needs to be distinguished from fishing for compliments or an expression of low self-esteem. Those kinds of jokes come from a weak ego, which, you know, I don't mean this to sound harsh, but when we indulge in that kind of humor, it's another harmful form of self-absorption. And it feels worse than the kind of self-absorption that's, you know, bragging or whatever. But each in its own way, both approaches are just rife with suffering. So what I'm advocating is a sense of humor that comes along with and can actually cultivate a healthy ego. And that's based on just not taking ourselves very seriously. Because, you know, just between you and me, we don't exist. The self, not there, really. But that's another Dharma talk. In fact, you know, if you look at it, it's our tendency to get all worked up about this stuff that makes it, the joke funny. That's kind of where the humor is. Attitudes. You know, if we notice that we're having an attitude like, oh, I should have been mindful while I was doing my physical therapy, and so I'm a bad person or whatever. It gets pretty silly when that kind of an attitude is taken seriously. But it's another matter when these attitudes are taken deadly seriously, because, you know, when they have too much attachment, taking them personally, identifying with them, you know, they can lead to some really unpleasant conduct, like hate speech or mob violence or the Third Reich. If you've got, you know, an attitude about someone or something that's negative, it can lead down a very nasty path. So it's great to practice on the kind of medium strength attitudes and just bust their cover. Like Wavy Gravy said, when you lose your sense of humor, it's just not funny anymore. It's so important to be able to chuckle about what our minds do. Wherever you go, there you are. Your luggage may be a different matter. But even that can be good for a laugh. You know, I mean, far better a giggle than raging about the ineptitude of the airlines. I mean, who today really expects the airlines to do things right? Enjoy it. Make it a joke. The less we cling to the idea of what we or other things ought to be, the easier it is not to be upset by it. And how much better it is to be entertained by it. A sense of humor helps us keep things simple, including our practice. We don't need to take it all that seriously. I mean, really, it's just breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. You forget to do that, and the least of your worries is going to be achieving nirvana. And I know after a while it can seem like all of the books you've read and all the Dharma talks that you've heard are telling you to do something different than the way you're doing things now. But we really all just want to point at things that indicate you're fine, just the way you are. And all you need to do is realize that. Relax, chill, mellow out, have a laugh. A Zen student once was standing on one side of a raging river. There were no bridges, and he didn't have a boat. So he shouted to the master on the other side of the river, "How do I get to the other side?" And the master shouted back, "You are on the other side." Well, my talk was a success. You saw the humor in that. Thank you.